Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are in your ears, thanks to oldfootballshirts.com. Well, the international break is finally over and now we can get back to league action with us sitting sixth in the table and just 2 points off the top spot. Today, we travel to bottom side Norwich, who will be hungry to register their first win after picking up their first point of the season last time out at Burnley. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wes, and we'll have a chat with Tim Allen from Mental Health United. And we will also hear from Di Cunningham from the Proud Canaries. So, hi, Al, nice to see you.
Hello, darling. This is just a show of you and me this time. This is a rarity. This is actually a throwback. And I've got to tell our listener this. This is a throwback to the Albion Raw from days of yore. And by that, I mean, and let's set the scene a little bit here. For those who know Central Brighton, when AD and I first started on the Albion Raw, I was a guest and then I brought AD in as a guest. And as time sort of flew by, we just basically kicked the others off. Not true, but, you know,
that's
the story I'm telling to the judge. But it was the same four people each time, and it was always Richie Parker and Johnny
Harmon,
who would swap alternative roles each week for presenting and sub-presenting. And then there was Murray and Paula as well. And it was a great show, and it was something that, you know, when they invited me on, I was really happy to be part of. But in this instance, seeing as it's just you and me, we are stripping it back to the bare bones. But then just for once, and we've had international breaks before, AD, there's not a huge amount to talk about, really, is there? Because at the moment, I wouldn't say everything's rosy in the garden. It certainly isn't. But we're sitting pretty, aren't we?
It's looking very good. Obviously, the league table makes for very pleasant reading. It could have been more pleasant reading if we'd actually beaten Palace. It would have been nice to be top of the...
And Arsenal.
It would have been nice to be top of the first division for the first time in our history, which would have been terrific.
Hang on. Terrific. Mate, it would have been astronomical. Sorry, I do like your normally you are one of those chaps who likes to indulge in a spot of hyperbole, but to say terrific, no, we're way beyond terrific, mate.
I'm also one of those people that would also say don't look at the league table until after 10 games. So
saying that we're in sixth at the moment after seven, but carry on.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, we things are looking good. We're playing well. Our XG's, we're not outperforming it for a change, which is great. expected Greer. That's what it is.
Well, the great thing is that also, I mean, all right, we've lost a couple of players to injury, and one of those is your Rolls Royce of a player, Danny Welbeck, and that is a tragedy, and longer than we anticipated in the first instance. But
that's what I wanted to talk to you about, actually, Al, because I mean, obviously, injuries are going to be a major thing for us this year, as they are for every club every year, and like, we are very, very light up front without Danny. Neil started the season terrifically well. Yes. Aaron had a great game in the cup against Swansea, but he hasn't really pulled up any trees so far this season for both us and for Ireland. It doesn't leave us with an awful lot. So, I mean, we've got... we've learned never to to second guess what Graham Potter's going to do.
What you have to bear in mind, I think, and I think that this is where us as English football fans or football fans, you know, brought up on an English tradition, are kind of a little bit rigid on the considerations that we have for a given player's skill sets. A player is a midfield player. He's a defender. He's a forward. He's a winger. And, you know, without really considering that they might have another set of skills. And I always hark back to a good friend of ours on the Albion Raw, Adam Virgo. Started life as a fullback because every defender is. Played centre-back and then played a season and a half up front because Mark McGee saw something different with him. Fast forward now, sort of those 15 years. With Graham Potter, the nature of the fluidity with which he plays and the fact he can change things around. Yeah, he might have to make the odd substitute in order to change the tactics. Let's think of Crystal Palace at halftime. He had to take Dan Burn off in order to put a new midfielder on because it wasn't working. But my point is that he has within his squad enough flexibility. Reference Pascal Gross playing at right back. No thanks, don't do that, but he does. To actually say that, hang on, we can have other people up front. I love the fact that Johnny Cantor asked Graham Potter this week, do you like the idea of Shane Duffy being a centre forward? And this is straight from the Mark McGee playbook here.
It is.
Did you see Graham Potter's response? He said, I might have him as a box-to-box centre-forward, centre-back. He won't thank me for it, but it's worth considering.
Well, I do like to think that Graham Potter has finessed Mark McGee's velvet bag, where number nine, like number 19, Adam Berger, would be playing in goal.
You've got that point, but anytime you see Graham Potter's starting 11 at 2 o'clock for a 3 o'clock kickoff, or a quarter to seven for a quarter to eight kickoff, you see the lineup and you think, okay, is he going with a back four or a back five? Because you know that Veltman can play right wing back, or he can play right, or he can play right back, or he can play centre back. Is Dan Burn going to be on the left or just on the left of the middle three? That's the point, all right, you know Lallana's going to be in midfield. You know that Alzati, when he's not crocked himself, is going to... You know certain people are going to be here and there. You could have Trossard in a withdrawn role. You could have, you know, I think the only other thing you're going to have is that Maupay, if he's playing, is going to leave the line. Above and beyond that, all bets are off. Mm. And it's for anyone else to suss out, and that includes the opposition and the home fans, to work out what it is Graham Potter's got in mind. And I think that there is enough. I know you're talking about, with Welbeck being gone, you've got Maupay, Trossard, maybe Connolly and Solly March at a push up front. But yeah, we're not just relying, as we've said so many times on the roll, we shouldn't just be relying on our forwards for the goals.
That's very, 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 very good point there. But the other thing is, of course, I mean, I should mention this as well. There's an absolutely terrific interview on the Albion website at the moment with Terry Connor.
Go on. And,
which was basically, he's all to do with Black History Month and yes. The fact that he was our first black player of the season, but I don't see it that way. It's just, he was just our player of the season for that year, and he was a terrific player. But what he said in that interview is the fact that what he coaches to the players that he's under his tutelage at the moment is, what else do you bring to the team? Because at some point the goals won't come, at some point, you're going to be missing sitters. So, but if you're bringing something else to the team, you'll stay in the team if you're good enough. So, and that's where when you look at someone like Danny Welbeck, who doesn't necessarily score as many goals as he probably should, but he brings a whole hell load more to the team.
The stats aren't necessarily spectacular, but also, I mean, if you're going to look at it that way, look at Pascal Gross. Does he bring pace to the team? No. Does he bring a zinging dead ball to the team? Absolutely. And the world's slowest, and to the point, it's not a Cruyff turn anymore. It is a Gross turn. In fact, it's grossly sick, that turn that he does, time after time after time. And don't get me wrong, there are some excellent Premier League defenders out there, but how many fall for it time after time? We can see it coming. And with a, woo-hey, oh, another Premier League defender has, you know, fallen victim to the world's slowest turn. Mm. Brilliant. But that's the kind of thing that that I think that Terry probably has alluded to. If you're not there for the, and this is one of my bugbears, is the number of people, right, okay, it's a centre forward. If he's not providing goals, he's got to provide assists. If he's not providing that, what's he doing there? No, it doesn't work that way. Yeah. You know, if you're talking about Danny Welbeck out playing out wide, His opportunity for assists is there on a certain level. But do you know what? In a given situation, he's then going to play it to Cucurella, who's going to go flying down the wing, get to the byline and get it across. Welbeck is part of the build-up, but he's not part of the assist stat. And that really doesn't tell the story. It tells us, but and for all the touches and the percentages and the numbers and this and that and the other, it completely does away with the human element. And this is why we're finding it so difficult, I think, in my view, as to ascertain why we are getting the results so far this season where we weren't last.
Okay, well, we do know that the games are going to get more difficult from here on in. Obviously, we go to Norwich. They've had a difficult start to the season. If you look at their fixture list, you know, I mean, for a newly promoted side to have like Man City and Liverpool in consecutive weeks,
Well, so have we.
Well, we have, but they had the first two games of the season.
Far be it from anyone to suggest that society is necessarily going down the right route, especially when we saw aspects of homophobia, racism and other discriminatory forms that we do get to see on a day-to-day basis, both in football and society as a whole. To talk about this and many other aspects of what we can all do about it, I've got Di Cunningham, who is co-founder of Proud Canaries, evidently Norwich City fan. Good weekend to talk, and also organiser with Three Lions Pride. Di, welcome back to the Albion Raw.
Hello, Alan.
Listen, we're not going to talk about this weekend's game because A, it'll jinx it, and B, we know we're going to get stuck. So let's talk about sort of the hat that you kind of more visibly wear that isn't yellow and green. Is that you are a kind of a very much a spokesperson for the LGBT fan movement across the country. So with that in mind, let's know how and why you decided to campaign and to have a voice for people across the country.
Yeah, I mean, for me, in terms of my kind of personal journey, I became a Norwich City fan when I came to Norwich to work in 1993. And I was essentially a football tourist. You know, I'd never been a fan at any particular club. I'd been to many over the years. And when I came to Norwich, you know, it was a great deal. Season ticket that year, you got the European Cup games as well. Let me just remind everybody that we were in Europe in those. Beat Bayern Munich, Gossy volley. I started going to Norwich City, and then within a few weeks of going to Carrow Road, I was absolutely cemented as a fan, because the family atmosphere, the vibe, there was all the excitement with the Chase Out campaign, and you know, brilliant stuff on the pitch too, with players coming up through the youth system, developing young players. You know, the first season it was Chris Sutton, who was a youngster back in the day, it was Rule Fox, you know, Gossy, as I mentioned, and bringing in some great players from elsewhere too. So, you know, and then Delia coming in, you know, and Stephen Fry being associated with the club. So kind of what's not to like, really. And what was not to like was I realised around the time that Norwich Pride in 2008, right about that time, I just realised I was compartmentalising my life when I went to football, when I would just, you know, in no other aspect of my life would I soak up homophobia. And I was hearing it, not like overt chanting, not like, you know, you folks have had to endure over the years with the does your boyfriend know you're here and all that stuff. But so it wasn't chanting, it was just the mumbles, you know, the microaggressions, the you know, that the ref was a poof, and just the word gay used in a derogatory way to describe what was going on by people sitting around me. And there were two guys behind my season ticket and my girlfriend's season ticket seats, who just every home game we'd hear some kind of low-level homophobia. And it was really depressing because they both brought their sons, their little sons, you know, less than 10 years old. And so one week, actually, we'd been hosting in the morning. It was around February time, so we'd been celebrating Justin Fashanu. And we'd been hosting the Justin Fashanu campaign, and we'd had a five-a-side game with them the night before. And then in the morning, we met in Norwich City Centre, and we had a little exhibition that involved Justin memorabilia, and people stopped by just to share their memories of Justin. It was such a lovely thing. And then the afternoon we went to the game together, it was against Southampton, and the guys just started being really homophobic. And so I just had enough, and I turned around and said something, and I just felt that it was quite extraordinary. I'm really quite assertive in the rest of my life, but that was the first time I'd ever said anything. And I suppose it's different, isn't it? You know, when you're gonna be sitting in front of that person again in 2 weeks' time. So we just like recognised there were a bunch of us who were fans who also were involved with Norwich Pride, and we just thought this is crazy. We knew about gay gooners, So we went to the club and said, look, we want an official fan group because we want to address, you know, poor behaviour in the stands, you know, the kind of language. We want signage that makes it clear that's not part and parcel of going to football. We want stewards to be trained to deal with this stuff and, you know, people dealt with. And we want to be, you know, we just want you to endorse us. So they did, they endorsed us. And that's been the most transformative thing, I think. And we didn't know. And the other groups that quickly grew up around the country following the steps of Gay Gooners and Proud Canaries, we've all realised, I mean, there are over 40 groups now, we've all realised that actually the thing that we offer football in terms of changing the match day experience is our visibility. Because nobody can pretend that LGBTQ plus people don't go to football because they can see us. You know, they see our banners, they see our flags, they see us at Carrow Road parade around the stadium. And, you know, so we're here. And that does seem, to an extent, to moderate people's language, at least in the stands, you know, not so much maybe on social media.
What does your visibility as Proud Canaries offer those who wish to join you under that banner? What does it offer them?
What it offers is a kind of a validation of their LGBTQ plus identity, which is often demeaned in football. You know, being gay, as you Seagulls fans know, is often used as a slur in football. It's a kind of shorthand for weakness. And so it's quite difficult to be out in football. And so, you know, obviously for the greater good, it helps us to be visible. But it does help us as individuals as well, I think. You know, there's a young man who joined. He's getting to be old now because we're going so long, but he joined as a team and he has said that this was such a positive thing for him because he had, you know, role models, other fans who were out and LGBTQ plus, and so he didn't feel so different. Obviously we're all part of the fan family, and that gives you an identity, but until we don't hear all the kinds of, you know, sexism and racism and ableism and stuff, until that stops, people who are different are always going to feel slightly isolated. And so being part of Proud Canaries, I think, has really helped.
So in the 13 years that you talked about since you set up Proud Canaries, and obviously on the back of Gay Gooners, Proud Lily Whites and what have you, what do you feel, both as Proud Canaries and part of the LGBTIQ football family, that has been achieved? Or have you had steps forward? Have you had steps back? You know, paint the picture from then compared to the picture now.
Yeah, I think the change that's been, it's really hard, you know, when you see something constantly, week in, week out, it's sometimes hard to notice change, and you sort of have to take a snapshot now and look back at the equivalent, you know, a few years ago. But I think what happened at the Euros kind of crystallised some of the changes for me, because to see UEFA claiming that the rainbow symbol was political was just so alien, you know, and you know, and to see, to hear the changes. I mean, even, you know, we're going to play you and it's going to be really interesting to hear, you know, really hope not. And we are taking some steps to raise the issue. But it will be interesting to hear if any kind of novice fans, you know, people who are going to see a Brighton match for the first time, because there will be some youngsters, you know, who new to football folks who've never seen Norwich play you and you play here. We're really hoping there won't be any homophobic chanting. But I think last time we played you, was it the year you came here and you thought you were going to get the title here?
No, we played you in the Premier League since.
We have. That year, though, we played you three times over the two different seasons.
Yeah.
The first of those three, there was a lot of homophobic singing, and the second there was less, and the third I think it was virtually none. And what we did was, in reaction to the first game, we kind of, with the other football pundits and bloggers and different fan organisations, we just kind of shared a kind of please don't do it on socials and stuff. And the idea was that people would sing over it if they heard it, or challenge if they felt comfortable to do that. And yeah, so by that third game, when you didn't get the title,
I'm going to intercede there. We knew the Norwich game because it was the one immediately after Wigan. We thought that's not the game we're looking for our win. It was Bristol City at home. That's the one we were looking for, and that's the one we made a pig's ear of. Although, to be fair, you did win the game by not having a single shot on target. But it was 4 years ago. Who's counting?
I know. I'm terrified about. But yeah, so I think, you know, we may hear something, but in scheme of things, I think things have changed. People's behaviour, it certainly was improving before lockdown, but now we've got to deal with the fact that people got more and more toxic on socials, and now they're transferring that behaviour back into, or, you know, possibly transferring it back into the stands. And no, hence we heard again at the Euros, the racist taunting.
Because when we were, before we started recording this, you made the point that you felt that it was returning at Brighton. And I think what had happened was, is that we had, certainly once we got to a bigger stadium, and maybe there was an air of envy about the fact we've got a decent sized stadium, we're a team on the up, we're not this sort of, you know, little third division club anymore, which historically we have been. And so, you know, you've got to attack someone somehow. What's for someone's first port of call is to use homophobia. But when we were sort of one of the top championship sides, we used to get it quite a lot. And, you know, we got fed up of it, but we also sort of laughed it off. The usual retort was, you're too ugly to be gay. And to be fair, it worked. Now, we've spoken to various LGBT groups about this, and they are split as to whether that is appropriate or not. But it's what we use, and it's what happens. It's just that when we got to the Premier League, and I am going to name names here, it was Leicester City. Their fans were making the most homophobic noises at the King Power, and suddenly it became a story. It was a thing. It was something that was happening. This is outrageous, the Premier League. And we're thinking, well, it might not happen in the Premier League too much on such a vast scale. But for us, it's not news. And that's what got to me about it. And yet, you know, whilst the city of Brighton and Hove has a disproportionately high LGBTQ population, that doesn't necessarily transcend itself into the fan base. We're talking about a lot of people who have come in from out of town, maybe because they don't feel comfortable in their home environment and find that Brighton is actually quite a safe, relatively safe space. Who knows? I haven't done research on it, but that's what it feels like. And yet, therefore, when you've got local people in, we're talking about just sort of like the national average here. There's nothing specifically special about it. So when we get this stuff coming our way, it's a double anathema. One, it shouldn't be said in the first place. And two, well, amongst the fan base, it's not a thing. It's just that because we've been, and I've said this to Football v Homophobia, you don't have to be gay to be on the receiving end of homophobic abuse. So we are familiar with it, you know, and I can shake it off as a straight guy. I can shake it off along the lines of, well, you don't know what you're on about. But I can't put myself in your or the next person position who is on the receiving end of this and is worried and mindful of it. And I do have friends who used to go to football, you know, fearing that their homosexuality was going to be outed, and that they either are going to lose their friends, or they're going to be a social pariah, or whatever it might be. And I guess that's probably where the whole proud movement comes in.
Yeah, I mean, it does a kind of multitude of things, really. I think in terms of being in the stadium, it just reminds people who might be there, hidden disabilities or LGBT plus, you know, you can't always see by the colour of someone's skin that they're from a minority community. And so I do think it's more difficult, even for the most troll-like person, to be unpleasant in person, you know. So the more of us that are there, the more of us that are prepared to speak up, and that, you know, includes active allies, then, you know, the faster football will change. But I guess it is really difficult for you folks. And I think we've talked about this before, that kind of, and I understand people taking issue with you're too ugly to be gay, but it's punchy and it works. But the underlying assumption there, I think, is that no one in the stadium is gay, you know, and actually no Brighton and Hove fans are gay. And and I can understand how that's happened. And it's kind of, you know, it's kind of defensiveness, just a town full of F words.
And if you're going to be homophobic, keep it to yourself. You can't actually physically change that person's will. They have to do it themselves through persuasion, but you can't actually physically do it. But if you can get them to keep their nonsense to themselves, and that's part of the battle won. Di Cunningham of Proud Canaries and Three Lions Pride and many other things, thanks very much indeed for coming on to the Albion Raw.
Thanks, Alan.
I think they will improve at some point. Let's just hope it doesn't happen on Saturday. We know what it's like. We followed Brighton for way too long to not realise that if a team hasn't won for like 6 years or whatever, and Brighton comes to town, we know exactly what's going to happen.
Oh, it's all about the momentum. I mean, you know, players do talk about it as if it was some kind of magic force, but there is this attitude of momentum and winning, getting into being a habit. And which is why, I mean, we've got the Leicester League Cup game coming up soon. Now, the League Cup may or may not be a priority for Brighton and Hove Albion, but I'd like to think they're going to put a strong side out there. One, because Leicester are no mugs, whoever they put out. And two, because winning becomes a habit. And if that happens to be the case, that we then get to the quarterfinal of the League Cup, brilliant. But I'd like to think it's not necessarily just going to be done by the kids. It's brilliant that the under-23s are turning up there, but I think that there is a case to be said for having more first-teamers in that League Cup against Leicester.
Well, I mean, my theory is, and I said this before on the show, and I'll say it again, your job as a football club is to be as successful as you possibly can and to win as many trophies as you possibly can.
Does that apply to the Albion Roar as well? If not, we're rubbish.
But it, you know, at the end of the day, you'll remember getting to cup finals. You won't remember putting the kids and getting knocked out in the fifth round or whatever. It's
well, there's that in terms of memories being made. Then yes, I mean, the furthest we've got is that fifth round. The fifth round is the quarter final of the League Cup, and there was that, and we've only done it once. It was that famous game in 1979. I'll say famous for those who were there. Where the Seagulls, the Albion had chartered a train and it got stuck somewhere between Brighton and Nottingham. We played Nottingham Forest, who at the time were on their way to being the European champions. And we lost 3-1 in a game that, you know, maybe the Albion could or could not have done better. But there is an awful lot of Brighton fans knowing full well that the one time we've got to the League Cup quarter final couldn't actually watch their team. So it depends on the extent to which the Albion are going to take the League Cup seriously. And given that the squad has been pared back and thinned back, then you could imagine that given how the Stiffs have done against, well, Swansea and Cardiff, then, you know, who knows what can happen next. At the very least, I personally would like to think that this is now into the business end of the cup draw and that they're going to put that a better team out.
Look, I mean, you say that, but I mean, you know, the team we put out against Swansea, it had five full internationals in the starting lineup, although only four of them starting because one of them got warming up.
It also had four under-23s who were making their debut. But the point is that we did well enough to. Oh, don't get me wrong, Swansea, their shooting was worse than ours. But, you know, it was a game we did well. We got the win. And, you know, it'd be nice to actually have this cup run.
Okay. Well, one player that did start against Swansea in the League Cup was Tarik Lamptey. He hasn't actually got any minutes in the Premier League yet this season. It'll be a good time for him to come into the team on Saturday, maybe?
I'm still not 100% sure. I mean, it seems to presume that there is an issue with Joel Veltman. And I don't think Joel Veltman has done anything to lose the shirt. He is a solid defender. We saw the quality of his pass to set up Neil Morpay for the most recent goal that we've scored. We love seeing someone like Lamptey go flying down the wing, absolutely. But the hype that's been around him, I can't help feeling he is now a little bit of a busted flush along those lines, in as much as a surprise package. But if you're going to play the Premier League, my preference personally is still for Veltman. Having said that, I'm not Graham Potter. I don't get to see them day in, day out, week in, week out. So, like with all choices that he'll make for his starting 11, you know, it's going to be a mystery.
Well, he has got a few selection headaches for this weekend. I mean, we've got Adam Webster coming back as well.
If Webster is ready, then I think he should be back in. Just because it's not as though anyone else has done anything wrong. But I'm not. Along the same lines, I'm not convinced that Lamptey is part of the strongest defensive line, unless he feels he can take liberties against Norwich, in which case by all means, send Lamptey flying down the wing. But if you're going to have your best defensive lineup, personally, I do think it includes Webster, but I also, by the same token, think it includes Veltman.
I think that for this, I mean, Graham does tend to pick horses for courses.
What you mean is we can never guess him right. That's what you mean.
This is true. But I mean, personally, I mean, against a side that is currently bottom of the table, you'd like to see Cucurella and Lamptey unleashed and go and unleash hell upon the Canaries, boys.
Yeah, no, it doesn't quite work like that. I've never seen Cucurella go flying down the wing. What I have seen him is basically being a solid defender and a solid person who has an intelligent footballing brain. Lamptey is this wonderful flying winger who can go sailing past someone. Cucurella is that much more of an experienced, wise head. But also, I mean, let's face it, this fella's Barcelona trained. He's not, let's put it this way, he's not Lamptey's equivalent on the left-hand side.
Well, we do have a few selection headaches for Graham there. Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. The show is brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And I do have a shirt of the week for you here, Mr. Wares, for you to have a look and describe for me.
Well, what can I say? It's a lotto shirt. Phil does actually pay a lot of mindset to the manufacturer of the shirt. It's lotto. It's yellow and black stripes. The advertiser across it is Nuon. That's N-U-O-N. I'm assuming it's him that's drawn his online crayon across the badge. I'll tell you what it reminds me of in terms of the style. It looks like the Albion shirt from about 20 years ago when we had our stuff made by Araya. The collar is similar. The neckline is similar. The stripe width is similar. So we've got that kind of look. So I'm going to say this shirt is about 20 years old. I'm going to say, because who has a yellow and black away shirt? Well, that could be anyone, and ask Phil. As for the team and the colour, I'm just going to say, throw it out there, some non-league side from Derbyshire.
You would be incorrect. And I know there's some listeners to this show who will be very delighted with this shirt, and my pronunciations are going to get killed by our good friends from the Netherlands. This is the 1997 to 99 home shirt of Dutch Eredivisie side Vitesse Arnhem, who play at the 21,248 capacity Gelredome. Vitesse were founded in 1892, and they are the second oldest professional club still in existence in the Netherlands, after Sparta Rotterdam, who were formed in 1888. The roots of Vitesse actually predated Sparta by a year, as in 1887, a club with the name Arnhelnesh Cricket and Wolfsbergen Vitesse was formed by a group of high school students who played their sport at the Rinkade, which is overlooking the River Rhine in the city centre. Reluctant to choose a Latin or English name for the club, as they felt those languages were too elitist, they picked the French name Vitesse, meaning speed. In 1891, the club disbanded as they were no longer able to find anywhere to play cricket after a velodrome was built at their usual playing field at the Clarendiek Park. The following year, a group of wealthy students resurrected the sports club, this time the name ABC, Achanes Voetbal and Cricket Club, Vitesse. In the summer, they play cricket, and in the winter, they play football. And in the end of 1892, Vitesse played its first real football match. In 1894, Vitesse disbanded the cricket branch, and in 1895 and 1896, Vitesse became champions of the Gelderland competition. They've never won the Eredivisie. They haven't really won an awful lot, to be honest. But Vitesse have had some notable former players, including Pierre Van Hooijdonk, Philippe Cocu, Glenn Helder, Sander Vestergaard, Patrick Van Aanholt, Wilfried Bony, and Mason Mount, who was there on loan from Chelsea. I think they do get a lot of players on loan from Chelsea. And obviously there are a couple of links to the Albion as well. including David Prerper, who was there for a while, and Romaric Yappi, who joined the test this summer after 2 years at the Albion.
Plus our good friends, Werner and Lido.
Speaking of Werner and Lido, Al, I should mention that a new edition of the Dutch Seagulls magazine has just come out. I've just had one land on my doorstep this week.
All right, you get one and I don't.
I'm in it, actually. There was
what?
I know.
How?
Basically, I did an interview with Lido in the summer, and all about football in empty stadiums. And yeah, I can't understand a word of it.
Well, to be fair,
if you could translate it to English, well, that'd be great, guys. I mean, I can read it to you if you like, if you want me to have a go at it.
But it's, no, thanks. And with the malaise of modern society, that things are actually sort of getting on top of us all the time, the considerations, the mental health considerations we've had during COVID lockdown and the kind of the gear crunch that we've had to go through in life and society, that I think is a prudent thing, that when there's people out there who are prepared to stand up for others with mental health issues to resolve. And with that in mind, I'm delighted to say we've got Tim Allen, founder of Mental Health United in Brighton, who's come onto the Raw to tell us about the foundation he set up. Tim, welcome to the Albion Raw.
Hi, Alan. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Let's start at the beginning. Who are you and what is it you've set up?
Yeah, so we are Mental Health United, and we are a group based in the Brighton area who run what we call football therapy sessions. So for me, therapy, the picture I always had was sitting around in a circle talking to people, and we are definitely not that. The aim is we run two sessions a week in the Brighton area where people can come down, play football. You don't have to sit and talk about your problems, but the main aim that we have is somewhere where there's organized football with good facilities, and it doesn't matter if you have depression, anxiety on a range of scale. Everyone has mental health. It's just where you're at, and our aim is that you come along, play some football, and leave happier than you arrived. Like, football has that incredible power to do that to people.
I mean, I guess probably one of the notions that people have about combating mental health issues is to exercise. The whole notion of just going for a walk, clear the air, go. We're lucky we've got the downs and the sea to, I guess, sort of clear the air and inspire you. But when you throw in playing football with people who, I guess, offer up a support network, you kind of, not say onto a winner, but the thoughts and considerations that go into tackling mental health. Mm-hmm. Football can be a major resolver of this, could it not?
Yeah, 100%. We've got people who have been with us. We've been going for 7 months now, and we've got people who have been there since the start. And every week I get sent some amazing messages from people who come to the session saying what an impact it has on their life. And it's huge. And going a bit more into how we got started, I've had my own ongoing issues for a significant period of time now. And when I moved to the Brighton area 18 months ago, I was like, okay, this is the type of project I want to find to just play in. And I started looking around and couldn't really find anything. People would say, oh, that should be coming from the FA, or that should be coming from wherever, but I couldn't find anything. So I took the mentality of, well, if you can't find it, then make it. And there we go. And now we have Facebook following about 200 people. We have 80 people registered each week wanting to take part in sessions. And that number is growing rapidly. And yeah, just for me personally, I can have the worst day at work and head to these sessions, and I get to hang out with 24 like-minded people. Footballing ability is a wide range. We've got some players who play at decent standard. We've got people who come who have never kicked a ball before. And we try to make it, I've always had this phrase of like, let's make it inclusive rather than exclusive. And that's one of the reasons we made the decision to not make it a competitive team. So we don't play in like an organized league or anything like that at this time. Instead, what we do for competitive games is we organize fundraisers once a month, once every other month, where we're playing other teams scattered across the Southeast and trying to raise a bit of money for local charities that we work with.
Sure. You said you've been down here for about 18 months. So do you find that as a community, the city has a can-do attitude then?
Yeah, I think it's been really open to our idea, whether it ranging from those who come down to the sessions and being like, oh my God, like, this is really what I was looking for, to people who I discuss in passing, where it's like, oh, I've got to go because I'm doing this thing. And they're like, oh, could you tell us a bit more? There's like an intrigue to it. And then they're like, oh my God, I can't believe no one has ever sort of been doing that in the area. All the way to, I mentioned the FA already, to like speaking to their team and like them trying to give us pointers and some direction of how we can grow this. Like, it needs more support on that level. But as a community, like, I think Brighton is a great place to be running this type of thing.
You set this up in 2021. You set it up this year, yeah? Whereabouts are you playing? Are you playing across the city, or have you found a pitch, or what is it you're up to?
So pitches are a tricky area. Like, what I've discovered is Brighton has a shortage of pitches and a really high demand. But at the moment, we're down at Hove Park. We're down there twice a week at the moment. Normally, we have one session, but like on a larger scale, but we play at Hove Park. And starting in November, we've just secured a new spot at Lancing FC, Culver Road, where we're going to be having a half a pitch like every Thursday evening, which gives us the ability to host another 24 people. So yeah, like we're slowly growing. We've gone from one venue to two, and then hopefully we go from two to three, etc.
So if you're not careful, this has the wherewithal to go countywide quite quickly, especially if you're jumping from Brighton to Sussex FA's HQ there. So that's quite a leap. If someone was to wish to come along and participate, do you offer it as a training session or as a kickabout? What can people expect if they feel that they could benefit from turning up?
Yes. So at the moment we operate as an organised kickabout. As I said, organised kickabout with nicer facilities rather than the park pitches that we have. And so a general session is turn up. We have like a little bit of an intro chat, just similar to what we just discussed about what the sessions are about. Leave with a bigger smile than you arrived with. And then we play football for 55 minutes. We make sure teams are as balanced as possible. We encourage those that have like a lesser football ability to be given a little bit more time so they can, like, time on the ball, so they can develop their skills, get a chance at being able to pass the ball, etc. Yet at the same time, as I said, we have very good players who they're encouraged to go on an amazing run and put one in the top corner and celebrate like it's at Wembley, because that's what football's about, right?
Absolutely. Is there any cost to turning up to these sessions, or is it free? How's that structured?
So at the moment, because we have to cover pitch hire, etc., we're completely self-funded. So anyone who comes down to the session for the first time to see if it's their thing, we offer that to them for completely free. We want to use that to get people involved. And then after that, we charge £4 per session, and that's £4 for an hour.
Yeah. So when you turn up at Lancing, you turn up at Hove Park. I mean, you're going to be playing football, but I guess it's a tricky one. If I'm just thinking in terms of if I was to come along, you know, that it is basically football, and that you're not there to be judged or anything like that. I mean, I assume that everything is just, you know, let's have a bit of fun.
Yeah. So we have had people come down who, that initial anxiety is the walking into a room of 24 that people you've never met before, right? Like, that alone can make some people freeze. So if there are people out there who feel like that and they want to get in touch, I try to take a one-to-one basis with that person to begin with. Like, we can have a call on the phone, on Google Hangouts, on Zoom, wherever they want to, and we can talk a little bit more about the sessions. I'm always happy to arrive there a little bit earlier, so they get one-to-one before the group slowly starts to arrive, and then they get introduced to people. Apart from a 1 minute chat at the beginning, there is no standing there and being like, it's not the stereotypical, hi, I'm Tim, and this is why I'm here. And
it's here. The reason I'm here is to plant one in the top corner. That's basically.
And the main thing which I try to emphasize, we're not a counseling group. Like, I don't have any, like, the future scope would be great to be working with somewhere that can offer counselling and be able to offer funding so people can get that. But we're not a counselling group. We're more of a support network. We've got a very active, like, WhatsApp group where seeing the transformation of people over time coming out their shells and feeling part of a club, feeling a part of something, like, that's really important. But instead, what we offer is that community, that little bit of personal support in the role of a friend, and signposting. So we work with Grassroots Suicide Prevention, who are based in Brighton, who offer more signposting, more access to resources. So anyone who is in a bit of a crisis or is in a bit of a hole, we can signpost there. And Grassroots have been great with us because they've offered our team like free training in exchange for like us fundraising. So we have got a couple of mental health ambassadors in the team who are a bit more aware of like how to deal with these situations and to provide people that signposting. I think one of the areas which is really interesting is that I've had people who say, oh, I can't attend talking therapy. I can't attend counseling. I just can't build myself to be able to go to that type of thing to deal with these issues. I think I always thought that Mental Health United would be supplementary to having that kind of support. And in fact, what I've discovered is it's for some people, it's the first step.
Sure.
Like it's an environment, maybe they've been involved in football for a while. It's an environment they're familiar with. And for some people, it's the first place where they're saying, yeah, I've got these things going on. I don't understand what they are, but like this is somewhere where I feel comfortable putting myself out there a little bit.
Now, we've had on our show before Ian Hart, and he's talked about his mental health issues over the past few years. And his main attitude, and something we very much support in the Albion Raw, is to get everyone talking, even if it's just a case of going through your phone list and phoning up one mate once in a while, arbitrarily just to say, hi, how are you? Is it that kind of networking is the sort of thing that Mental Health United will be happy to support?
Yeah, I think we mentioned late that we've got an active WhatsApp group, we've got active Facebook community, and encouraging that network is something, it's an area we need to improve, but it's an area which I'm really keen to develop. Again, I've talked about some of the people who have come to the sessions and it's been fantastic. There's people who have said, I moved to the area and I didn't know anyone and I find it really hard to connect with people, and this has been great for that. There's people who describe themselves as not being very social, apart from within their family. And again, it's given them a platform. And I think it's connecting dots for people and it's giving them extra support that they wouldn't have otherwise.
Has a new community been formed on the back of the sessions that you do have?
Yeah, 100%. It's been a recent development, but the social side of it has grown. Like it's becoming more than just a football club. So already sessions are being followed by people being like, hey, let's go for a drink after. Or we've got in December, we've got a Christmas party coming up, which we're using as a fundraiser. And it's a really good way to thank everyone for their support, being a part of it. But yeah, the social side is growing very rapidly. My aim is on top of the sessions, fundraisers, to be able to incorporate things like, I don't know, going go-karting or going bowling or just meeting in the pub or going for a meal, right? I think that building a network for people, it's building a club, but not in the traditional sense of like a Sunday league team.
Yes, no, I'm with you. And is there a way that anyone can donate towards this as well? I mean, you mentioned the website, but is there any way of donating as well?
Okay, yep. So we have a Just Giving page. Which is justgiving.com/MHUFC. And people can donate there. Another way which people can donate, maybe you run a small local business. We'd like sessions to be available to more people who perhaps can't afford it because they're out of employment due to mental health issues or anything like that. We're always seeking sponsorship, whether it be £50 or £200 or whatever, like just to give you an idea of what £200 can do. That can fund someone coming to sessions for like nearly a year, which is pretty incredible. So if there are small businesses out there who want to help us, then that would be amazing.
Absolutely. So before people come along and want to know a bit more information, talking about signposting, where can they get more information to know where and when they can come along?
Yep. So rather than giving you the whole list of everywhere, I would say people should first head to mentalhealthunited.co.uk. Our social channels are all there. Join the find our Facebook group from there. Find us on Twitter from there. And let's start talking and get you along to sessions.
Tim Allen, founder of Mental Health United in Brighton. Thank you very much indeed for coming on to the Albion Raw. As some of you may know, last week we had the 11th Robert Eaton Memorial Fund Quiz Night. Great fun was had by all. We raised £510. Naturally, the likes of Andy Bass and Salisbury Mark and Phil Shelley won. That's a little bit of a canter. But yes, worthy winners. And thanks to them for coming along, which means that, AD, my dear chum, I'm going to offload onto you. And it's not nice. One of the rounds I always do, and it's always the lowest scoring round, is about Brighton and Hove Albion. So, and bearing in mind that we did get an 8 out of 10, there's no pressure. So, to compound this misery, here we go. 10 questions. There's actually 11. I did do a round of 10, but then I threw another one in another round. So, here we go. First one. Since being promoted to the Premier League in 2017, there is only one current Premier League team Brighton have not beaten. Who is that?
Everton.
Is that your final answer?
Yes, it is.
No, the answer is Chelsea.
We've not beaten Everton, though.
Yes, we have.
Oh, we have
beaten Everton. Own goal in the last minute.
Oh, God, yes. Yes. And
and a 1-0 penalty win.
Yes.
There is one other club, actually, that we have not beaten since we went up there, but they're not a current Premier League side.
Who is that?
Sheffield United.
Oh.
Question two.
I've been blunted there, then.
You have. Question two. Five Brighton players made it to the Euro 2020 tournament. Who of those five was the youngest?
Okay, so there was Trossard, there was Moda, there was Sanchez, Ben White. I can't remember who the fifth one was. I'm going to say Sanchez.
That too would be incorrect.
Oh, doing well here, aren't they?
Moda.
I was going to say Moda, but I thought, is he older?
No, he's quite a bit younger. I think he was only an under 21 until last year.
This is true.
A few people did put Zakiri, but he didn't actually make it to the tournament.
He didn't, no.
Okay, who scored Brighton's last goal last season?
The last goal last season, Christ. Dan Byrne.
Dan Byrne will be correct. Well played, sir. Just 1 out of 3. Finally got there. Question four. Which current Brighton player was born furthest south?
Right. Okay. We haven't got any Australians anymore. Furthest south. I would say Mwepu. Oh, God, my mind's gone completely blank. I don't know.
Take your time. It's like I say, imagine that he is under quiz conditions.
I need a list of players.
No, that's called cheating. This is under rent of quiz conditions. Mind you, under rent of quiz conditions, you'd also have five teammates around you.
Yeah.
They'd be knocking your brains out.
Is it an African player?
You think I'm going to answer that?
No.
Oh, but don't ask it then.
We haven't got any Australians at the moment. What's further south than Africa? Is it Alexis McAllister?
Sweet Jesus, how could you forget South America?
Well, yeah, I had. Africa and South America aren't.
Question five, and it's just a number I'm after here. Of all players who have played in the first team, league and cup this season for Brighton, how many were born in Sussex?
So it's Lewis Dunk, Ed Turns, Solly March, Hayden Roberts. I think that's it, four. I'm going to go with four.
You did very well there, actually, but it's actually five. You've left out Adam Webster, who was born in Chichester.
Oh, of course he was, yeah.
But as for the others, Dunk, Turns and Roberts were born in Brighton and Solly March was born in Eastbourne.
Yeah. Way. Oh, well.
Yeah, not bad, actually. I think a lot of people might have not realised Ed Turns and Hayden Roberts.
Well, the thing is, when Ed Turns made his debut, I was in the press box that game and there was a lot of head scratching and a lot of Googling going on to find out exactly who he is. And where
there
he was
a lot of Ed Turning, wasn't there?
Oh, nicely done.
Question six. What role at the club is undertaken by Danny Bowman?
Danny Bowman, she is the women's team captain.
Very good. Question seven. Who is the men's first team coach?
Men's first team coach is Mr. Reed.
That would be incorrect.
Oh, is it? Who is it? The other fella.
Bjorn Hamburg.
Bjorn.
Billy Reid is the assistant head coach.
Oh, good.
basically the role that Tanno had, whereas Bjorn Hamburg's role is effectively the role that Charlie Oatway had.
I thought they were both had the same title, to be honest. But there you go.
Question 8. Who was the first Brighton player to score in a league match under Graham Potter?
Aaron Connolly.
I'm going to ignore that. Try again. We were
I know. It was the first Albion player to score.
Yes.
It was Neil Morpay. Or was it Andoni? Andoni.
Sure?
Yeah, it was Andoni.
Yeah, well done. You were there.
Yeah. Watford. I forgot. I completely forgot.
Yeah. Question 9. And bearing in mind that in between writing this question and the quiz happening, things moved very, very quickly. My question was, with which country has Brighton under 23 prospect Jeremy Sarmiento been training this week? In between me writing that question and the quiz happening, he actually played for them.
Ecuador.
Well done. And question 10. Who scored Brighton's last league goal in League Two?
Bobby.
No, it was Danny Cullip, the winning header against Chesterfield.
It was that game.
Yep.
Ah.
Yeah, because we played that game on the Tuesday. We played Halifax away 0-0 and then lost 3-0 at Shrewsbury, where, according to Adam Virgo, half the team was still drunk, which worried me greatly because I'm thinking, why only half the team? What links? Joel Veltman, 2. Jiří Skalák, 67. Leandro Trossard, 75. Jakob Murder, 90.
Can I have the question again?
Certainly. Joel Veltman, 2. Jiří Skalák, 67. Leandro Trossard, 75. Jakob Murder, 90.
And what's the question?
What links those? What do those numbers have reference to?
Knowing you, Al, it's probably degrees of where they were born on the... I don't know. Oh, God.
I like your thinking. Actually, I should have done that. No, but I do like that thinking.
Gosh, I've got no idea. So I've got absolutely no idea, Al.
Shall I put you out of your misery?
Yeah, go on.
Shall I put you out of my misery?
Yeah.
It's the minutes on the pitch during the Euro finals.
Ah, there we go.
So we're talking about 5, which is very average and about the going rate for the given how stinky those questions were.
Well, I'm a bit disappointed with that. I could have done better.
But don't forget, you're on your own. And like I say, in quiz terms, you'd be with another half a dozen people anyway.
And I've also got a small person banging on the door trying to intercept me. And that's all we've got time for this week. So thank you to Alan Wares. Thank you to Tim Allen from Mental Health United. Thank you to Di Cunningham from the Proud Canaries. I've been Amy Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online, radioreverb.com, on DAB, of course, on our podcast, and in association with allfootballshirts.com. Thanks for listening, and hopefully we'll be back to you next week talking about another win. See you then. Bye. The reason why, oh, I can't say, I have to let you go, and right away, after what you did, I can't stay on, and I probably feel a whole lot better when you're gone. For a long time, baby, for a long time, you had me believe that your love was all mine, and that's the way it would be. But I didn't know that you were putting me on.
say, that it's not like before. And I'm not gonna play your games anymore. After what you did, I can't stay on. And I'm probably leaving.